Working.
Perfect. 2 minutes delayed. If that's everything.
We're here.
Exactly. Welcome, everyone. Nice to see you here. And we have a guest today, which is Rumor. It's funny because in Dutch, it's really called Rumor. But in English, it has a different saying, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I also use it for my usernames everywhere, basically. So Rumor has it, right? It's just the English saying, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's but it's a cool nickname online. Definitely. Right. I liked it when I saw it first time.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a pretty unique one, as the O is with OE, which in Dutch is, of course, O.
Yeah, but, exactly.
So no, mostly I get first pick.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So yeah,
I have the same thing with Joey Sucky. Like, no one really has Joey Sucky, so I'm always the first one. It's nice.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Well, so, lesson one: have an original artist name.
Exactly. The first lesson: make sure all the nicknames are claimed before you even start making music.
Yeah.
So let's start at the beginning. How old are you now?
I'm 30.
30. So let's get back to when did you start making music? How old were you?
I was 21. Nah, that's not completely true. Yeah, that's when I started the Herman Brood Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And before, I mixed music a lot, like DJing and stuff. I bought a Traktor S1 from Native Instruments, the first S1 MIDI controller back in the days.
Yeah.
And I was living by myself when I was 18. And then I started just when I wasn't working at home on an old hi-fi setup with super old speakers from my dad back in the days, like 40, 50-year-old speakers. Start mixing music while my friends were hanging out at my place and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then at a certain point, I realized I had to do something with my life, because I did some studies when I was, like, I was done with school 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some studies, first years, didn't finish others. Mm-hmm. The first year, and then at 2021, yeah, I figured, man, what do I want to do with my life? And actually, in my spare time, I was just mixing songs and sonically trying to find out rhythmically what worked. And I hung out a lot with Nouveau Riche, which is Boas van de Beats producer.
Yeah, he's a famous guy in the Netherlands right now.
He actually has 2 Grammys. He produced a lot for Major Lazer.
Oh, really? Didn't know that.
Yeah, Ghost Productions, pretty crazy Ghost Productions. He lives in Israel now. And so I hung out with those guys, and they all did the HBA, the Herman Brood mm-hmm. Academy. And they were like, yo, you should apply, man. So I applied, and then I had to figure out how to make music, because the course was dance producer, and to get in you had to have 3 finished tracks, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the 3 tracks I admitted were the 3 first tracks I ever produced. And I did it in combination with a friend of mine who produced, but he didn't mix, and he wanted to mm-hmm. learn how to mix, and I wanted to learn how to produce, so mm-hmm. that was how we helped each other, and we actually both got accepted.
So does that mean that the bar is just really sick low, or was your music just really great?
No, my tracks were actually pretty good. Like, okay. And remember, it was 10 years ago, eh? So there was no Splice. There were a few big plugins. Serum wasn't even there yet. We were working on Silent with, like, the first complete of Native Instruments. That was the sample Valhalla. So Yeah, no, and plus the guy who accepted me, Mark, who introduced us.
Yeah. To like a bit context for the people listening, HBA is the school which probably is known for the fact that Martin Garrix went there. And Mark is Mark Alton, which is the producer. Well, I think he helped Martin with a lot of his productions. I'm actually not sure what he did, but or was he just a teacher?
First, teacher. He was head and teacher of the dance department at the school.
Yeah.
And then in the beginning, we had him for not even a year, and then he went out. And I was also in the same class as Martin Garrix and Julian Jordan and Tones and Tone, formerly known as Swag. Alex Fassi, who's coming next week, was a year above me.
That's a talented group.
Yeah, no, it was a fruitful year, definitely, for sure. So yeah, no, he accepted me, and he was also, of course, the tracks had to be good, but he was also listening for, or looking for people, because we had to face to face showcase our music and talk with it. Just a proper audition. And based on everything he saw, he accepted me. So, yeah.
And until how long did your own music career last, or is it still active at this point?
Really, dance wise, it was until 2 years after HBA. So I was 21, which was 9 years ago, 2013, 2012, until I think 16 or 17. But you cannot really call it a career. Well, it was production, a lot of productions with friends, different aliases. One of my most successful aliases in dance terms was Toke, which was a group, and Toke stands for Three of a Kind, together with Yael, which is CMCS, also from our class, produced In the Name of Love with Martijn as well. And Jeffrey. Jeffrey was Alpha Rock, kind of a like the first hour EDM name.
Yeah.
Like Progressive House, when it was still Progressive House instead of now Main Stage or whatever.
EDM, whatever you want to call it.
EDM, whatever, yeah. We released also a track on Spinning and one on Mix Mash, and we were producing a lot and in negotiation with also with Jorn, which is now our boss.
He's had A&R, right? Had A&R at Spinning.
He's had A&R at Spinning, like senior A&R. And he always was the go-to guy, like at the Herman Brood Academy, not the go-to guy, but the guy you wanted to reach. You wanted to get your music too. You wanted him to listen and maybe even give feedback. So, yeah. Herman Brood Academy, Herman Brood.
Herman Brood, okay. So, how did you end up at Spinning, where you work now?
Well, because in the beginning I was pretty close friends with Martijn when we were in the same class, hung out a lot. He wasn't, like, he started to get some traction, of course, because mid HBA he just exploded. And before that, I did some tour management with him. So I did some European gigs with him or the Dutch gigs, just hanging out. And he was already signed with Spinning, and Spinning was still doing management stuff as well. Which they don't anymore. And that was my first interaction.
Did they quit the whole management thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Didn't know that. Yeah. Continue.
So there's no in-house management anymore. No. So that was my first interaction with spinning, like from the inside out, getting there at the office, meeting people and stuff. And then Martijn blew up. Still, Martijn wanted me to become his tour manager. And then I did some tour management with Tony Jr., who was also signed there. Went out with him a couple of times. And then also simultaneously or a year later, I was still making my own music, had a foot in spinning because of already knowing Martijn, Jeffrey releasing on spinning. So yeah, over a course of of the last 7 years, I just for all different reasons I came there already. And then at a certain point Jeffrey was A&R there. He just got hired as A&R, and not even a year later I came in because they were looking for a DJ promoter at the spinning.
And is that what you do today?
Yeah, so as DJ promoter at spinning, what's the most important part is that I try to create hype around the club tunes we release, mostly via DJ. So two main fields, as in online radio shows is a big thing. Like the Club Life of Chesto is a 40 million listener a week worldwide radio show. So it is a big stage to have your tracks played in. Also very important if you want to grow yourself, like before you even think about labels, have your music out by yourself and go promote it yourself. We'll get back to that. And so yeah, that's what I do. And also the big live stages, so Ultra, Tomorrowland, whatever. Trying to get some of our top priority club tracks into the big stages and the big sets, so you can use all that content to further push the hype around your release over all other platforms.
What's the main thing? Well, not the main thing, but what's one of the biggest things that you've learned from that job so far?
It's all business. It's all business. It's not, nothing is personal. Before I started at spinning, as an artist myself, everything I produced was with my heart and soul and were my babies. And that's not wrong. That's not wrong at all. That shows that you care. But the music industry doesn't care like that. Compared to you, how you care about your music, the music industry doesn't. And that's not a bad thing, actually. But that was a thing I had to realize stepping into the business side of working in the industry instead of the creative artist side. That was definitely the biggest thing. Like, oh, it's not personal. It's not personal at all. At all. Like, they get so many demos. They are the most successful dance label in the world for years now, on all kinds of platforms, on all kinds of numbers. YouTube, Beatport, just this week, Beatport number one.
Nice.
Most sold. Man, I sound like a spinning puppet now, but facts though. It are facts. So, and what I wanted to say with it, not to boast, but to remind myself in the first place, like, they have the luxury to work with the world's biggest artist because they are the biggest, and they are a business, and the world's biggest artists are businesses. If you have a business of your own in whatever field, it doesn't matter. Would you rather work together with a hugely successful other business and amplify the business? Or would you ethically always try and work with these super small, high risk, up and coming, but original businesses, which are just way less likely to earn you or to make an impact on the scene.
Yeah.
And that's the analogy that was most important to realize, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's a super, super fair point. And I, for me as well, like, I also remember the moment where it clicked for me, like, holy shit, you know, like, I've been focusing on the wrong thing for way too long of a time. Because as an artist, you're super emotional about your product, your music. As you said, it's your baby. It's all your emotions are in there, your thoughts, your everything's in there.
You're highly invested.
Yep. Yeah, and somehow you get over invested into the song and you stop realizing that it's just a song. That's how a label looks at it in most cases. It's just another song on top of the mountain of demos that comes in. So it's a great perspective from you and a great ad, I would say, to see, a learning curve for people to see, like, okay, to me, it's the most emotional product I've ever made and I'm super invested in it. And to other people, it's just another song.
Exactly. Which is both correct.
Exactly. It's not either one of them. It's both.
It's both.
Yeah. Regarding the promotion, because you mentioned that you send it out to DJs, you send it out to online radio stations, maybe like regular stations as well. What is the key in a good promotion campaign, in your opinion?
Great question. There has to be something unique about it.
Mm-hmm.
And
could you give an example of something that could make it unique?
Well, if, for example, you get your track played by, and let's keep it world stage, you get your track played by Tiësto before it's signed, that's a great fucking story.
Yeah.
Like, hey guys, listen, this is my track. Tiësto supported it already on main stage EDC, whatever. That's a great story. Another story. There has to be something happening in a sense. Like,
there needs to be some sort of buzz around the song.
Yeah, exactly. There has to be some momentum. At least the days in 2014-15, the EDM bubble, the EDM hype, everything worked and you get signed easily as a young talent, because that was a unique selling point back in the days. Now it's not anymore. Like, I just saw a TikTok movie of some producer kid of 4 on an iPad. I was like, get out of here. So it's not unique anymore, right?
Yeah.
There has to be something going. And that can be like, that can be anything. You can have a viral moment on TikTok, for example, whatever. Your sound has gone viral underneath some dance.
One of the biggest things I get from clients, and which I kind of wonder as well, I think I know the answer, but I just wanted to ask you, do previous Spotify numbers actually matter to you as a label?
Previous or current?
So if I'm sending a demo to you of a new song which I would like to get signed, but I have 10 previous songs released which have hit, I don't know, over a million streams, does that impact your decision on signing an artist, yes or no?
Yes, it does.
In
it
which
is
way?
Important. Well, it is kind of the one of the factors, how we or anyone can see how successful you are. It says a lot. It's not everything, but it says a lot. If you have 500,000 monthly listeners, that means you have a community or a fan base, which is interesting to cross crossbreed with other artists, for example. Yeah. Everything you want to do is make one and one is three, like amplify stuff. So it's not the holy number, but monthly listeners definitely has value for sure.
And I'm assuming the same goes for followers on Instagram and whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, what's happening now with all the social media and TikTok taking over the game, as in the sheer amount of eyes looking at TikTok every day. So a lot of attention goes there. Music industry, entertainment industry will follow. Mm-hmm. Simple as that.
They have to, I guess, you know, and of course. I'm not sure which I had this talk with. What we were talking about TikTok and the hit list at this point, like how many songs actually come from TikTok.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Like the Heatwave tune from what is it, Glass Animals?
Yeah.
Man, that's a track that's been out for 4 or 5 years, I believe. I might be wrong here, but it's not a new released song. It went viral on socials. And it's now for weeks on end on top of the Spotify worldwide list.
Yeah, it's sick. And kind of the same thing happened to, I think it was Spinning that signed that song from Vistone with the funeral dancers, that meme.
Ah, right. Yeah, exactly. It happens. Like
5 years later, the song popped up, went viral, boom, hit.
Exactly. That's how quick it goes. Yeah, exactly. Lucky guys.
Yeah,
those guys dancing. Yeah.
Funeral dancers. Yeah, it's crazy how that goes. But I can imagine that from a promotional perspective, you can use DJs, you can use radio stations. Are you also focusing on influencers, for example, because they have reach as well? They can impact the damage that a song can do, or the hype that you're building as well.
Yep.
And how are you using them? Like, are you, paying them to post something, or?
Yeah, that's a crazy new market as well. But yeah, there are agencies with influencers under them, and mm-hmm. they come up with and sometimes completely insane numbers per post, flat fee or something. For example, but it's such a new market. There is no. There's no standard protocol. This is so new. Like, all this stuff is just only happening in the last few years, like really booming.
Yeah.
But definitely, like, everything goes. If you have a friend which is an influencer with 30,000 followers or 300,000 followers, you betcha that you should talk to him or her and try to somehow give them value for their socials, which they can give back by putting your music underneath something they made or something.
Yeah,
like always try to think out of the box and work together with influencers in the broad spectrum, like people with influence, people with a following, not per se social media.
Exactly. What I always try to teach my clients or tell my clients is that promotion is about creating reach. You know, like creating ears to listen to your music, reaching out to new people who are willing to listen to your music. And as you mentioned, like having a friend in your environment who has 300,000 ears, like possible ears that might like your music, you want to use a platform like that to bring them on board. Like, even if you Definitely. Would get like 1% of those people in, that's 3,000 people.
Yep.
It's a numbers game eventually. Yeah.
For sure.
Continue.
Yeah, no, and that's it. Like, and that's how it works in every industry. That's what marketing is. That's how you want to get your product in the focus of people.
Yeah. Do you think promotion and marketing are the same, or would you say it's a different thing?
Promotion is marketing. Marketing isn't promotion.
Okay, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so marketing is the big picture thing. Promotion mm-hmm. is a part of marketing, but marketing is... So in marketing, you have promotion, but in marketing, you also think bigger than just promotion. Like, you strategize and then go promote. You know what I mean? So it's like, you have the marketing. You have all marketing, and a part of the marketing is promotion. So marketing is bigger.
Yeah. What's a nice tip that you would have given yourself, knowing what you know now, to the younger self when you started out being an artist? Don't say buy Bitcoin, because that's what everyone does.
Oh man. Well, I'm a bit crying right now because of Bitcoin. Oh well. It was expected. No, but try and understand the big picture. Like, seriously, all producers that start to make music, or all artists that start to make music, they start with having great taste and very unique taste.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you have. This is what you should build from. And then the love of music is probably also there, which will always be there. And then this combination is perfect to start creating music, but nobody is born with knowledge about the industry.
Mm-hmm.
How the industry works, if you hate it or love it, it doesn't matter. You have to play in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
Not only you, also the labels. They do not have... they do have a lot of impact, of course, because they are companies with 10,000 people working day in, day out for them. So, of course, there's a lot of power. But figure out how the industry works. Try to zoom out as much as possible without thinking, because I zoom out a lot, now my track doesn't matter anymore. Nah, it depends on the perspective. But try and zoom out as much as possible and understand the big picture of the music industry. Mm-hmm. And with that knowledge, just start working. And it will always take time. It just will always take time. If you blow up from one moment to another, that's incredibly difficult. Actually, that's just to maintain,
highly likely.
To start, huh?
Highly likely that it actually will happen, you know.
What, blowing up big?
Yeah, like, it's a really small percentage that you're gonna blow up overnight.
Yeah, exactly. Highly unlikely, definitely, completely. The chances are very slim, and if it happens, it's one of the most difficult ways to stay relevant. Like, you start on a high, and then you need to stay relevant. And Martin Garrix is just a crazy unicorn in the scene. The way he did it, and how big he went, and how relevant he still is, and just how big he still works. But it takes time. It just takes time. Seriously, it's so cliche, but it just takes time.
Yeah, but people really underestimate the impact of time, you know. I once heard a quote which was really impactful to me, at least, which was, we overestimate what can happen in
what
a year. Yeah, and underestimate what you can do in 10 years, you know. Like, it's crazy how the mind works, but we all make this mistake. We all do.
Yeah.
And it's good to realize that every now and then, that if you really are building a career from this, that's not going to happen overnight, you know. It's going to take 3 to 5 years at least before you will be making a living from it. Some people will do it quicker. Yeah. Some people it will take longer. There's too many variables that have impact on it. But
depends on your commitment.
It depends on a lot of things. Commitment, talent, you know, like, how talented are you? How unique are you? Do you understand?
Talent is overrated, though.
It is, in a certain way, in a big way, but sometimes it still actually helps to get pushed through, you know. Like Martin Garrix, for example, Animals was really something different. He brought something different to the table. And that really sparked, well, I think that sparked a lot of his career in the beginning.
Definitely. But most, it even moved the scene.
Yeah, but the majority of the artists who break through is not necessarily because of something new. So that's where talent doesn't necessarily matter. Yeah, true.
Yeah.
By the way, to the people listening now, if you have a question, you can leave it in the general chat if you want. We're gonna start by answering some questions in a few minutes. What would your recommendation be towards an artist if they want to get signed to a label like Spinning, for example, which is the holy grail for most of them? What's the go-to thing that you should do as an artist to become interesting?
Get to a certain level.
Yes,
and talking not just Spinning, but majors, Universal, mm-hmm. Sony, and Warner. If a major starts to become interested in you, you are doing something already. Stop thinking a major will sign you if you only have 10,000 monthly listeners.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too big of a gap. So you should start with lower labels. Just start to release music with different labels, and then you have some tunes out. Then you have a Spotify page. Not a lot of numbers, but enough to show other artists who also just start out making music with a couple of tracks out, but with an official Instagram account, not per se with the blue dot, but with an artist thing, whatever. And then you start over time collaborate, and you just keep going at it. You keep going at it, and things will grow. Not by itself, of course, but just keeping at it, thinking about what you're doing. There's nothing wrong with investing in TikTok, your time, trying to create hype there. And there's nothing wrong with having a feeling, I don't want to do anything with TikTok. It's fine, but realize the importance of the industry, regardless of what you're feeling about it.
Yeah.
You just have to deal with certain factors, and TikTok right now is just a very potent playing field to gain hype in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Wherever before could you put something online content-wise and you can blow up and 100,000 people look at you?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It wasn't possible anywhere before in time, ever.
Yeah, that's crazy. So the main tip I'm getting from you, if I'll distill it into a sentence, is like, keep building until
a major label. Aim for the major, exactly.
Exactly, until they reach out to you.
You have to be interested. Exactly, you have to be interesting for a major label.
Yeah.
You shouldn't want to get signed to a label so your career can start.
Yeah.
No, you should start your career yourself.
Yeah.
And networks, everything. Everything I have right now in my career is because of a network.
Yeah.
Just go out there, get out of your room, go to conferences, and now we finally can after COVID. Go talk to people, meet people, go places where parties are, go get your music supported, go then film it with your iPhone, the DJ supporting it, then use that content, make a reel, make a TikTok a video, go do it, go do stuff. If you don't know exactly what to do, doesn't matter, think about something you could do and then do it, and then because you then have done it 5 or 6 times or whatever, you can then think about how much impact did it have, like how worth it was it, and talk about your experience with others. Build, learn.
It's a
marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, exactly. Great motivational ending to me. I want to thank you for taking the time to do this. Thank you to everyone who checked in live. We're also going to drop this video afterwards in the podcast if you want to re-listen to it again. Rumor, thanks for doing this. We'll chat after this, and guys, have a great day. Hope you liked it.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, and hope some people got something out of it.
I think they definitely did. It was valuable. Thank you.